Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today is Monday, February 5th, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 557 features the Boston Globe's Gary Washburn.
And I'm Evan Valenti, and today's show is powered by FanDuel. Get $200 in bonus bets with a $5 winning bet at FanDuel.com/Boston.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to a new Celtics Beat. Great to be back here with you. Great to have you here with us. Apologies, I guess, just to start things off. I know we did not have a show last week. We let it kind of bleed into today. So we'll make up for it. We'll give you a couple this week. It's just been chaos, absolute chaos, not only in just the sports world entirely with a whole bunch of college basketball. I hope people are out there watching and just getting yourselves ready for the intensity of March Madness a month and change from now, but also the Super Bowl. It is Super Bowl week. We've got Gary Washburn here with us from the Boston Globe. We'll get his thoughts on the Super Bowl in a little bit as well, but primarily we'll be talking NBA and, of course, our beloved Celtics. The C's, they still have not lost consecutive games going all the way back to very early November. They are coming off a absolute thrashing of Marcus Smart's Memphis Grizzlies, although Smart was not part of that. He was there. He was watching. He was honored by the team as a hero among us there at the Garden in his return to Boston. But without him on the floor, among other key pieces, that Memphis team lost by roughly 40 points to the Celtics. Absolute domination. Sometimes you have to laugh when you see a spread that's like minus 19 and a half and say, I got to take the dog. They're going to keep it close. Nope. Doubled it up. Celtics had their way with the Grizz. Gary, good to have you back here with us. Of course, you know Gary Washburn, not only from the Globe, but from his podcast, the Big Three podcast, formerly known as the A-List podcast. See, I'm training myself on what it is now versus what it was before with Sherrod and with Kwani. And so, Gary, it's great to have you here, as mentioned. How are you? How you been? We haven't talked to you in a couple months.
Oh, everything's good. Yeah, I'm good. I mean, obviously, the season's kicking in, like 32 games left in the regular season. So we're all way over the halfway point. So yeah. It's starting to get to that stretch run. And I think once the All-Star break passes in a couple of weeks, I think we'll definitely be in that stretch run. But just it's been an interesting, fascinating season so far. A lot's gone on. And a lot, I'm sure, will go on over the next 4 to 5 months.
Well, as you said, we're in the thick of it. You know, you mentioned All-Star, obviously All-Star festivities, weekend game, all of it. It's not that far away, but All-Star roster announcements have come out. Like, we know Jason Tatum is starting. We know Jaylen Brown was named, to the roster as a reserve. We figure a couple of guys are probably going to end up not playing, not participating on account of injuries. And so, you know, could Kristaps Porzingis wind up there? Could Derek White wind up there? You know, I've heard some people say, could they both wind up there? So it becomes a question of how many C's could participate in All-Star. But also, we're only a few days away from the NBA trade deadline on Thursday, and that has been a date that many Celtics fans have had circled on the calendar, just in terms of seeing how Brad Stevens can look to improve an already elite championship contending team. So let's start right there before we sort of reflect upon Marcus Smart's return to Boston and how this team is playing and all of those other good things that obviously we'll get to. What are your expectations on Thursday in terms of whether this team will make a move? And I know you've written very recently about,
you know, 10 notable guys, including old friend Kelly Olynyk, who could be on the trade block, and a couple of guys who maybe would be a logical fit here in Boston. Do you expect the Seas to make a move? And if so, how monumental?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't expect monumental. They just don't have a salary, or unless you're ready to part with a really quality player. So if you look at the salaries, Peyton Pritchard makes $7 million, I want to say. And so he would be the most tradable asset, but I don't think they want to move him. And then you can pair a bunch of the minimum guys together and try to get, like, let's say you wanted to get Kelly Olynyk. Would you want to trade three players for Kelly? Is that going to really help your team, including a Peyton Pritchard? That would be, you know, or someone of that ilk in terms of the salary, because there's a high and low with the Celtics salary. Everybody makes big money, except when it goes down to Peyton, and then you're talking about the lower guys. Al makes 10. Like, you want to trade Al for Kelly Olynyk? You could probably put in Lamar Stevens or something. You want to, I mean, these are things that are probably not going to happen. So if you're the Celtics, you're looking at a guy like Andre Drummond. I think they should go after Sadiq Bey. Younger, in the final year of his deal, who knows what the hell Atlanta is doing at this point. Would they take us a couple of second-round picks in addition to that Grant Williams trade exception for Sadiq Bey? What would it take for the Hawks to get off Sadiq Bey's contract if they don't think they're going to re-sign him? And I'm not sure if they are. Obviously, he's a free agent. Do they just want any kind of compensation? Or are they going to say, no, we know how desperate you are to win a title. We want a first-round pick. And then you're not going to trade a first-round pick for an expiring contract unless you certain Sadiq Bey's part of your future and you think you can re-sign him. So therein goes thinking over the next, 72 hours in that situation. So, or an Andre Drummond, who's making, I think, $3 million, the league minimum, would he add something to your team, and then, cause you think, well, in the big man category, Porzingis, you want to keep him on ice and make sure he's healthy and fresh for the season. For the postseason, you want Al Horford. You don't want to wear Al out. I think Al got really worn out at the end of the postseason last year. Look at his numbers. He just was not the same guy. Then you got the Luke Kornet experience. How much of that do you want? And obviously the rotation's tight in the playoffs, but how much do you want? And then Kata, but Kata's not on an NBA deal. He's not eligible for the playoffs unless the Celtics were to transfer his contract to a standard NBA deal, which I think would happen if, let's say, they had an open roster after the trade deadline. If they said, you know what, we just need his depth. We need that extra body. And he's provided some quality minutes over the last, couple of months. I mean, he's had his moments. He's still raw. So it all depends. Would Drummond kind of fill that third center role? Would he come here and pout because he wants to play? What would be his attitude? I think Brad Stevens, has said it before. He's going to bring in the right chemistry guy. I just remember the years when it was Keith Bogans and it was a bunch of guys who just did not want to be in Boston. And Brad learned from that experience and said, I don't want to bring in guys who don't want to be here. You want somewhat this year's version of Blake Griffin. You want someone who's going to be a team guy, maybe not as long in the tooth as Blake was, but someone who can be a useful player when he's on the floor, but a positive influence when he's off the floor and not playing. And that's a careful situation because when you get buyout guys, they want minutes. They're not going to join your team to sit on the bench. Now, the whole lure of chasing the championship is definitely encouraging for some guys. So Sadiq Bey might be like, hey, I'll give you whatever you need. I haven't gotten close to the finals yet. I just want to be part of it. Or you could have guys who come in and say, hey, I thought I was getting 15, 20 minutes a game. What's going on here? Then you can see their negativity they're having on guys, the influence they're having on guys like a Jordan Walsh. And I'm saying Jordan's going to contribute, but you don't want them to be a negative influence or a cancer, which is a little strong, but a guy who's just going to come in there and be like, yeah, this ain't what I thought, man. I'm, whatever happens with this team happen, I'm ready for next year. So that's a very careful decision over 72 hours. And I think what's going to happen is a lot of things will develop on Thursday when teams, are okay. Now here's the deadline. Now there's a lot of talk. Things will happen on Thursday. So I do think the Celtics will make a minor move. try to get a big in or get a swing man, a wing, a guy who can shoot threes. I think the O'Shea Brissett experience has not worked as well as I thought we all thought it might, where he was going to be kind of knocking down threes and he was going to be running the floor. I think defensively and rebounding, he's been fine. Offensively, he's a liability, I would say, in terms of his shooting. So if you could get an upgrade in that position, that might help too.
I'll let Ev follow up on some of the guys like Bay and others that you mentioned that obviously make more sense or more logical or more likely than this one. But you did allude to Blake Griffin. Any chance that – I know he's effectively retired, although I think, unless I missed it, without the retirement announcement, he hasn't been playing this year, but people expected that come the season. You just – you know, you talk about the fact that he was here and that he did fit a little old in the tooth, as you said, but – or long in the tooth, but he does sort of scream like PJ Brown, right? Like, you know, one of those types of guys comes in late, get you over the hump, pull him off the couch, a la, you know, the Browns and Joe Flacco. But obviously we saw it here in 08 with Cassell to an extent and Brown more fitting this description. Is Blake Griffin, the type of guy Brad could call?
Yeah, I think they probably kept in contact. And I think Brad's probably told Blake, hey, if you ever consider a comeback, we'd love to have you. I think Blake's probably enjoying retirement life, but who knows if he got that itch, you know, to come back and play. But and also what kind of shape he's in and what he would add to the floor. Like, it would be great to have him as a leader, you know, for him to finally get a championship ring and all that. But that would be just kind of, you know, for him. Is he going to be that guy who can give you some quality minutes? I just think you do want a ball player, right? You don't want a guy who's kind of, I mean, now, you know, with Blake, is the time off, has it done him wonders? Is he energetic? Is he like, hey, boy, I haven't felt this good in years because I've had 6 months off, you know, like, but how long would it take him to get in basketball shape? I'm sure he's in great physical shape. I mean, the dude's a beast, a sort of physical maven, but, you know, you look and you saw, you know, his legs are beat up from the years of surgeries and all that. He's not jumping over keys anymore. So, you know, I think that's a possibility. And I think he's got a good relationship with Brad and the organization. He left on great terms. But I think the Celtics will exhaust their situation with the trade deadline. Like I said, what is Chicago going to do now that they own Zach LaVine? The one thing, guys, that we're trying to figure out is what the hell is half these teams going to do? Toronto, Atlanta, Chicago, these teams on the bubble who are, you know, Golden State, Utah, like teams that could make a run for a play-in, you know, but it's like, is it really worth it to go, you know, go full bore at a playoff spot and then lose in the play-in tournament and you've added no assets through the trade deadline, you haven't changed your roster? So there's a couple of teams. I said Toronto's a team to look out for. Atlanta, what the hell are they going to do? They're under 500. I think they're 20-27. They've won four in a row, and I know they come to Boston on Wednesday, so you never know. But they're a team that nobody's afraid of Atlanta. No one's fearing it. The Hawks, even though we thought in the playoffs last year when they pushed us up to the six games that they would be take the next step. I think everybody thought, oh, Atlanta's going to be maybe a, you know, fourth or fifth seed because they got all the guys back and – full year Quinn Snyder ain't worked out that way. So they're a team to really look out for. And instead of the Chicago Bulls, do the Bulls finally break this whole thing up? Do they make major deals? Do they move Alex Caruso? You know, I think Kobe White's proven that he's going to be there for, you know, he's had a really good year. You know, LaVine's out again for the year. And what are they going to do with Vucevic and DeRozan? So there's some teams to really look out for. And in the West, I'd say Utah and Golden State. And what the heck are they going to do? And, you know, because it's now to maybe make a decision, we can make the play-in, but is that really worth it to gain no assets from the trade deadline?
You know, it's funny. I find this time of year very interesting for a multitude of reasons, but this particular year I find it very interesting because if you go back to, like, Danny Ainge's time with the Celtics and the head of the, you know, front office, he was always big game hunting, and it always felt like, you know, he was chasing X star, Y star, Z star. And, you know, it was always about picks and how many picks they're going to give up. Oh, Danny didn't want to give up a future pick and get us all angry and mad and all that stuff. But the information was always just kind of out there, whether it was real or not. You know, you'd get the story later on, like, oh, here's how close they really were, et cetera, et cetera. How hard is it for you and your colleagues at this point to try and get any information out of the Brad Stevens front office? Because I feel like he moves in silence, right? Like the biggest one of it, where like
Brad's the opposite of Danny. Like Brad does not, you'll see Brad, how he's completely behind the scenes. You don't see him at games. You don't see him on the floor. You might see him at the arena. Now he goes, obviously he's at every game. And you'll see him, hey, Brad, how are you? He's kept it completely low profile at his time as general manager. So it's hard to determine, you know, the thing that we got from his last media availability was that they might be looking for a wing, but it also could be O'Shea Brissett who fills that role. So you think that they might be looking for a wing, but it's hard to determine what the Celtics are looking for. Because as I said, in that organization, everybody's tight-lipped. Austin Ainge, David Lewin, all these guys, you know, they talk, hey, how you doing? They're nice, they're friendly, but they're not letting any information go. And I think that's the way Brad wants it. You know, where Danny was picking up the phone, telling you what's going on. Hey, you know, like he took a completely different approach. And there's no right approach or wrong approach to this situation. But with Brad, he's been behind the scenes, so you don't really know. But you do know that he's doing something. He's looking at somebody. You know, he is scouting. He is knows all these guys. Like, believe me, they know who they're trying to go after, right? They're on the phone. They're working the phone. They know. It's just a matter of when will we find out who is this player? Who will come to the forefront? What team will say, okay, Boston, we're ready to will and deal with you? Or is it we're taking the best offer, or we want multiple first round picks, or you know, whose asking price is going to be reasonable? All this is going to happen over the next 72 hours because now you have a lot of teams, guys, you know, looking to add the Cleveland Cavaliers, the New York Knicks, the, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, all the teams in the East, Miami, like, you know, the contenders, Indiana, obviously added Pascal Siakam, but, you know, who's going to trade for Bruce Brown? He's sitting there in Toronto. And obviously you're competing also with the teams in the West, the Minnesotas, the Denvers, guys who just want to add one final piece, because there's plenty of teams when you don't have a great team in this league. And I see themselves a very good team. I don't know if they're great yet, who feel like they can win championship. You know, I think Milwaukee says, if we get it together, even down to, all the way down to Miami says, man, we ain't worried about this regular season. Just get us in and we'll take care of the rest like they did last year. So it's going to be a very interesting 72 hours, especially on Thursday. Who is going after what? Who decides to shut it down and start selling? And who, surprisingly, will be buyers?
I want to spend another minute on that. I'm glad that Ev brought it up, because I do, you know, not being a reporter, not being a newsbreaker, I do find it pretty fascinating, you know, obviously doing what you do and what you've done so well for so long. Just the difference in these regimes is, as Ev hit on, the fact that, you know, whether it was, there's a lot of overlap, obviously, Brad being the head coach as long as he was, but, you know, Brad's hiring going back to 2013, contract extensions, you know, the promotion, obviously, to president of basketball operations with Danny leaving. So many things have happened in the shadows, in complete silence, in this, you know, in a world, you know, where that just does not happen anymore. Generally, it's people like you or Woj or Shams. You know, there's a leak, there's a nugget, there's a story out there. And it seems like Brad really does, you know, I know him personally as it relates to his own life and contract, especially with, I don't know if his wife is still his agent, but, you know, that, you know, that plays a role in it. Obviously, they can keep it literally in-house. But he does a remarkable job of keeping everybody who works with and under him completely tight-lipped. And so does that just basically tell us that any leaks that were happening previously were either directly, anonymously, quote fingers, from Danny, or in some cases, and I don't mean from you, I mean in the aggregate, in some cases made up, or just coming from agents or executives of other teams that were dealing with the Celtics, but it was never coming from Boston?
Yeah. I would say Danny was not one of those guys who was going to like have Woj and Shams on speed dial. He was not on either side in terms of those two. Those two are amazing reporters. They get it done. They're locked in. But Danny was kind of an outlier when it came to those guys and the big news breakers. Sometimes you'd catch Danny and he would get back to you. Danny was kind of fair to us in terms of like, I'm not going to just hand it to the two guys and then 10 minutes later go, oh yeah, it's done. And then, you know, you're 10 minutes late still, but they think they've done you a favor, right? That's not the case. In this situation, I don't know if it's more like there's no leaks, but I think that if you probably catch the right guy at the right time, and now I'm not talking about Brad, then you could probably get something going on. And all, sometimes it's the player himself. It's the agent. It is an agent wanting to pay back a reporter for a previous story, or, you know, now in our business, guys, it's about, you know, if you have 2 million Twitter followers and I have 52,000, who are you going to call first? You know, like if you want to get the news out, or, you know, sometimes people are like, I don't care what you, how many, like you worked hard for this. That doesn't really happen. I think people think that the beat writers don't work hard anymore because Woj and Shams, it's a lot going on. And it's as much as it is their amazing work and their hard work and living on the phone, like it's a dedicated situation, you know. I mean, you guys are, I would assume, either married or with somebody or in a relationship or whatever you have. And, you know, you don't, your wife does not want to look at you or spouse or mate, look at you always answering work calls. It's just not cute, right? It's not cute on Valentine's dinner when you're, I got to take this. Like that ain't going to score points at home. Sometimes you have to break away. You've got to put the phone away. My wife jumps on me about, look, why are you always on Twitter? Because that's where everything is at. You know, I have to explain to her how much Twitter and X now is a common source of news and information. So she asked that because she's not a big Twitter. She's on Twitter, but she's not big on her X. But she had to explain that to her. So I just think it's sometimes good luck, hard work, and sometimes you're following. If if I want to get some news out, I'm going to reach the guy with 6 million followers. I'm not going to reach the guy with 60,000. It's just, and as much as that guy with 60,000 worked just as hard and I might like him and he might be a good guy. So sometimes it's just popularity, politics, favoritism, you know, all of the above that go into this game. And, you know, I would like viewers and listeners to understand that it's not like, oh, y'all don't work hard. They work like, we work hard. Those guys, the Shams and the Woj, the pros of this business, work very hard too. Sometimes it's the outlet you work for. I work for a newspaper. That's old news now, right? You know, I mean, you know, newspapers are, you know, no one gets it delivered. So it's basically a website. And so it's, you know, people have to decide, I really want that in the Globe. Now, let's say there's a story about Jalen's going to the crime bill, right? The he spoke on about the age bill. When it was crime, where now you could be 20 and not 18, where you're not getting kids who really made bad mistakes. Like that's something that's, I think, let's say his people say, that's the Globe, right? That's a Boston story. That's a good story that we want to read thick, you know, we stick our teeth into. Jalen signing his extension is not maybe what the Globe, you know what I'm saying? Like yeah. That's ESPN, that's Yahoo, that's The Athletic, that's a big conglomerate, that's CBS Sports, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of what we compete with, and I get it. Like, it's not fair, and I don't think everybody knows, well, life isn't fair, so you're not asking for fair, you're asking for a shot, but, you know, that's kind of how this business goes now. You know, you sometimes gotta just take an L. You know, sometimes you just have to call the agent. The agent's like, oh, I meant to call you. Or, oh, yeah, my guy signed. It's official. And it's, nah, thanks. Because, you know, I've been calling you the last 3 weeks about this. And, you know, and we've been talking. But now suddenly you didn't answer your phone for another 10 minutes after it. You know, things like that. It's a frustrating business. When you do break something or have something, it's very rewarding. And you sometimes have to understand the politics of the business, especially with social media followers, especially with certain conglomerates that cover the league that are bigger than, let's say, where I work for.
Kaufman, you ever look at Shams' schedule, Kaufman?
What's that?
You looked at Shams' schedule before? He's talked about this.
No.
I would not want to be Shams. I'm going to be honest with you. That does not seem like a fun. Everybody's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to be like the newsbreaker? No, it wouldn't. Gary just talked about it. You want to have a family? You want to have like a life outside of your work, outside of your schedule?
Yeah.
Then don't be Shams. Because like he's in the car driving somewhere and he's got two phones going at the same time. Like that's for 17 hours a day. You can't be – you're always on call. Like no matter what you do, no matter where you are in the world, you're always on call. I value my privacy a little more than that. I wouldn't want any part of that life. I don't know if Kaufman, if you fantasized about it, I heard his schedule and was like, nah, I'm out. I'm good. Good.
No. I've read articles about those guys, Schefter, Woj, Shams. No, I mean that's like all these guys and like Gary is, you know, just you're obviously a more of a columnist than a beat writer at this stage, but still like it is a grind, man. It is like what you do and what your colleagues do. It's different levels of grind like you're talking about. But yeah, it is completely, I mean, totally infringes upon any sort of work-life balance. And so it's obviously on you.
But it's still exciting. I mean, the trade deadline coming up, you can't wait. It's your opportunity, however small it might be, 1 in 100, 1 in 10, to maybe break something, to call the right guy at the right time or call this, hear that tip. So it's still a challenge. I just feel like in our business, if you are okay getting your ass beat all the time, it's not the way it should be. You should be pissed. Even it's Woj and Shams. Even, you know, you cannot turn around and be okay being freaking Randall Tex Cobb. Look that up, kids, if you don't know who that is, or being Glass Joe. Like you can literally can't get, you know, you're getting your head beat in. That's not, you want to be mad if it's not great in another story, advancing the story, getting the player on the record for the first time or whatever, something that makes it fresh and new. That's the challenge of his job. And if you're not upset sometimes or most of the time that you're not, that the guys are getting stories or getting stories and it relates to your beat or your job, I don't know if you should be here. You can't be like, oh, that's just the way, you know, hey, and that, like, no, you should be pissed, even though it's not much you can do about it. Sometimes you can't do nothing about it, but sometimes you're still okay to be pissed. It's just like, you know, I mean, the Patriots lost 13 games and they were not favored to win any of them, but they were still pissed after they lost, right? Like, were they 4-13 this year? So, yeah, like, you know, it's just like walking off the field after a game at Miami and being like, oh, well, they're just better. Like, what are we going to do? Let's go home. I'm hungry. Like, no, you should be pissed, you know, because you're a competitor. This is a competitive business. This is the one business other than sports and probably, you know, other businesses where you're competing with other companies and comp sales and all that, where you compete. You know, I'm still a competitor. You know, I like getting stuff first. I like the nuggets. It should burn you up. And it doesn't make you mad at your competition. It doesn't make you resent them. You just like, okay, I got to be better. I got to make an extra call. I got to get that extra source. Or I got to talk to an agent and say, hey man, like I'm part of this too. Like, you know, cause they might not think, oh, I didn't think of putting you on the phone list. Okay. Like really you didn't. Some of these guys are, you know, play dumb, but you know, you got to do your best. And you know, when you are just like, you don't care about getting beat, it might be time to take a step back and maybe do more features or maybe other things that like, you're not, you know, competition doesn't matter. You're like, I'm good. Like maybe it's time to do something different. Cause I said, I'm still a competitor. I still like to compete. I still get mad if I see Woj or Shane. They're just going to whip my ass. You know, like, no, hell no. Like, it's just, sorry. That's just not how I look at it. I applaud those guys, appreciate those guys. I know those guys, you know, there's mutual respect there. So it's not like a situation where I resent them, but in all honesty, shit, to my language, like I want to win too.
Yeah. We'll circle back on the seas, but just because we've gone down this rabbit hole, I'm curious.
I'm going to check on my chicken.
Yeah.
All right. Can we take a quick break?
Yeah, you check on that. We're going to shout out our sponsor real quick.
Okay. We're back.
Let's take a quick break with that segue to tell you today's show is powered by FanDuel. Happy Super Bowl
Sunday. Of all the times to not have it be one of our food ads, too.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it a bummer? It's a real bummer. It's just the timing of it all. But yeah. Kaufman, I don't know if you've heard, but it's Super Bowl week, buddy. And thanks to FanDuel, America's number one sports book, you can get $200 in bonus bets with just a $5 winning bet by going to FanDuel.com/Boston. And if you're like us, Super Bowl Sunday is about scoring the best seat on the couch, grabbing your favorite football snacks, those buffalo chicken dips, your salsas, your handhelds, whether that's a burger, it's pizza, it's a chicken wing, it's hot dogs, whatever it is, getting some of those things and placing some Super Bowl bets, buddy. And Kaufman, how invested are you in the Super Bowl at this point? Because I might need a wellness check on you right now.
How literally invested am I?
I think, have you mortgaged the house yet? Are we up to the house?
I'm not as invested as I will be come Sunday. I'll tell you that right now.
I'm gonna run through some props here, Kaufman. I want you to tell me yay or nay.
Okay.
All right. McCaffrey, 35 plus rushing yards in each half.
Yay.
Okay, -110.
Yeah, I like that.
Pacheco, 30 plus rushing yards in each half.
Wait, 35 plus rushing yards each half is only -110?
Yeah, so this is, I let off with this one. I wasn't quite sure if you were going to hammer this as well. I mean, I think it's like almost a dead lock that
that shocks me just because his prop for the game is I think 89.5, 90.5. I would think your odds wouldn't be as good. Basically, I mean, pretty damn close to even money on 35 per half. I love that. Absolutely. Lock it in.
So we'll get that one going. How about Isaiah Pacheco, 30 plus rushing yards each half?
Yeah, I like that. Cause I mean, that was the first bet I played was over 65.5. And that one's creeping up around 70 for him now.
Yeah. So that's +200. Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. Let's see here. I like, I can't quite do anything Kelce related, but each team to score one plus rushing touchdown and one plus passing touchdown in the game.
I probably wouldn't play that. I could see hitting, but I probably wouldn't play it.
That is +270 if you want to take in on that. Yeah. Brock Purdy or Pat Mahomes record 400 plus passing yards. Honestly, this is a Purdy bet. Because Mahomes is not throwing for 400 in this game.
I mean, I don't think either one of them will, but I assume you got pretty long odds on that.
Yeah, it's juicy. It's +1,800.
Yeah.
So just something to think about. Folks, we could do an entire podcast about this. And honestly, maybe we should, but that's not for us to decide. There's so many props. It's going to be a blast. Be responsible on Sunday, but, you know, look, there's so much stuff to gamble on. It's insane. And you can bet on how many points will be scored, you know, the color of the Gatorade, how long the national anthem is going to be, all that fun stuff, and more. New customers today, $200 in bonus bets. If you place a bet of $5 and that $5 bet wins. So look at some NBA stuff, get in on those bonus bets early, and be ready to wager on the big day. Just visit FanDuel.com/Boston. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official partner, sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Style Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP-Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 100GAMBLER in West Virginia. Call 800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts. Or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
See, Gary, I bet you didn't think you had about 20 minutes to check on that chicken.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot of disclaimers, man. Man.
Don't get sued.
Gambling industry is real, especially when it comes time for the Super Bowl. I do want your thoughts on the Super Bowl, but I just want to – well, all right, let's just because we were just talking about it, let's go there. Do you – I know you're a West Coast guy, at least in terms of your Dodgers fandom. I don't know that you have any Niners fandom.
Absolutely not.
All right, perfect.
No. A group of Rams fan. No,
I am not. LA Rams. Got to be LA.
Yeah, I am not a 49ers fan. No, I have friends who are 49ers fans. Absolutely not. I remember like when I was like 19 years old, my stepfather, for reasons I'll never know, got me like literally a 49ers sweater. that thing never saw the light of day for like Christmas. He's like, my stepson likes sports. This is looks cool. What? Never.
I get the colors.
I never wore that thing. No.
So did you stay loyal to the Rams when they left LA?
No. Oh, no. I didn't have a football team for 21 years, I think, right? They moved back in 16 or 17.
Yeah.
95 to 17, I was like the man without a team. I kind of like the Patriots. Yeah. I picked those up. But I was not. Yeah, I loved NFL football, but I had no team.
Gotcha.
That's tough.
But now it is firmly Rams again because they're back in.
Yeah, I mean, I still like the Patriots are cool. Like I've learned to like those because I know how important it is to this area. But the Rams. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get any Super Bowl stuff. I still think I'm going to get me a Super Bowl T-shirt from 2 years ago. You know, But yeah, my fandom isn't as big as it was. But yeah, I mean, I was disappointed when they lost to Detroit in the playoffs, and I hope that they make the moves to get to that next level. But yeah, I'm not like diehard. I said the Dodgers are probably the only team that I'm just like, you know, that's my team. The Rams are, but not as much. And then Cal, like my alma mater, is where I live and die.
So who do you think wins the Super Bowl since there's no fandom to it?
I think Kansas City, to be honest. I don't know why. I just think they're so poised and savvy. I think it's a dynasty. I just can't bet against Mahomes. They just figured out a way to kind of manhandle Baltimore, and Baltimore made all these mistakes, and everybody thought Baltimore's a great team, and they're going to, you know, slice through Kansas City. They won at Buffalo. I mean, all these times you say, like, you know, they're dead or they're dying or they're going to get, you know, put out by another rising team, or it's Buffalo's year. That's all we heard. It's Buffalo's year. Then they kind of, you know, skidded, and then they came back and it's no, Buffalo's back. And then Baltimore, oh, no, this best Baltimore team since the 01 team that won the Super Bowl, like, you know, or even the one that, you know, won the Super Bowl and beat San Francisco several years ago with Kaepernick. I mean, you thought, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, why when they play Kansas City do they just fall over themselves, all over themselves? I don't get it. And it just as much as you can put all the McCaffrey and Purdy and Brandon Ayuk and Debo and, you know, Kittle and all these guys, you're like, oh, what a fantastic and a good defense with the great linebackers and all that. They get on the field against the Chiefs and just something happens. I just think the Chiefs just have it. They got it, you know, and that's hard to shake.
Well, they got that Patriots thing, not present day, but for, you know, 2 decades. That's without a doubt. We can go on this. Speaking of going on and on, I am going to belabor the topic that we were talking about before our break with one more question. Then we'll take it back to Marcus Smart for anyone that's bored of this journalism talk. But I am curious because we were talking so much about obviously breaking stories and the work that goes into it, the pride that comes out of it. What is the most significant story you've ever broken? And I phrase it that way because I don't necessarily mean the biggest in terms of notoriety, maybe just the one you're most proud of. What is the one that really stands out to you?
Okay. So when I was living in Seattle and covering the Sonics, I got a random call from a woman who said that she had been conned. Evan, you know the story?
No, I just love the way we're already going. This is amazing.
Okay.
I just like.
Okay, damn, Evan, you read the story already? I'm impressed. You're better than Missoula pulling out my 2008 story.
What's going on?
He's on you, man. I enjoyed that that back and forth.
I enjoy all of them.
Yeah.
They're fun, you know. I love Joe, honestly.
Yeah.
Great. I like Joe a lot. So this woman randomly called me in the office and said, I have been conned by a man who is impersonating an NBA player, former NBA player, who is still the Orlando Magic's TV commentator named Jeff Turner, who played on the 84 Olympic team. He played at Vanderbilt. He played like 12 years in the league. And he's, if you watch a Magic game on League Pass, he is their TV commentator, right? 6'8" guy. I was puzzled by, so she told me the whole story that this guy said he was a scout and literally got her, gypped her out of money, faked like a relationship with her, had sex with all this stuff, man. So I'm like, okay, what do I do with this? So she gives me the guy's name. I reach out to the guy and he's like, yeah, I did it. I just wanted to get laid. Yes. And literally it was just, it was a front page story of this guy admitting he literally lived in Somerville. So I'm in Seattle. I had no idea what a Somerville was. He lived in Somerville. And he faked like he was an NBA scout. He said his name was Jeff Turner, and he conned this woman out of money, relationships, all that. And he freely admitted it. And so his picture was on the cover of the paper. Oh, my gosh. It was such that was one of the more amazing stories I've ever worked on, where he just freely admitted it. He did not deny it. He just basically said, yeah, I'm a sleazebag. Like, I'm just not, shoot me. Shoot me. Like, yeah, I lied. And I had to talk to Jeff Turner, who was like, because they got NBA security involved. Yeah. It was an amazing story of this guy. I can't remember his name. I'd have to find his name. And this woman who called me randomly. And, because I think what happened was a local Boston paper did like a feature, because this guy actually did play basketball, not in the NBA. But they did like a feature on him or whatever. And he said he was a scout, but he used his real name. So it was all crazy. And it was an A1 on the front page of the paper. And it was all about basically don't get conned. This guy lied. And the guy was 6'6". He was a former, I think, a college player. I don't even know if he played D1, but he was a former athlete. He resembled Jeff Turner, but picked Jeff Turner and said, and if you look it up, like I said, he played at Vanderbilt. He played in the 84 Olympics team with Jordan. He was on that team. So he was a very good player. And then he played 10 years in the league. And I think his last years with Orlando when they became an expansion team in 89. So yeah, like basically identity theft, con man, impersonation. And the guy said, yep, I just wanted to get laid. And so I got so much reaction from like guys laughing, women saying this is horrific, guys, I gotta meet this guy. He represents all the sleazebags of the world. Like, it was just all the reactions I got were just from this story were just so varied. Like, and the woman was so, she was like, thank you. And he wasn't mad at the story. I think he wanted publicity. He probably wanted to be caught, And his picture, I had to find the story. But that was
probably, time you talk to Jeff Turner about this.
I did. He was very like nonchalant about it. Like, yeah, I heard about that. He didn't say like you wrote like he didn't. Yeah, he didn't. I literally said, Mr. Turner, I know there was a guy impersonating you or whatever. Yeah, I called security. Then I've seen him over the years. Not recently, if I mentioned this, but like years after, because he's been in Orlando, obviously the TV guy for a long time. And he kind of was like, yeah, that was crazy, huh? Like he kind of downplayed it. I don't think it was something that a story he wanted to tell.
I don't think you're telling that to a lot of people. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. His first quote was like, yeah, I did. I just wanted to get laid. Like that was like, oh, so just imagine the reaction from our readers when he said that on the record. He said that on the record. And it was like, you know, basically, yep. Yeah, I'm guilty of being a total jerk in a sleeve bag. Like, you know, what are you going to do? Like, I'm not going to jail. I'm not, you know, like I wasn't honest. So what? Like, you know, it was like, yikes.
Well, it's hard to go from that to Marcus Smart, but I'm going to try. Let's work some of this smart talk in before we let you go. That was good. So Smart made his return, didn't play, talked to the media, nothing but glowing things to say, as you would expect, about his time in Boston and teammates and organization and, you know, any sort of anger or emotion in a negative way that he may have felt at the time of the trade. He certainly has either processed and moved on from, or he just, you know, completely treated it as water under the bridge. He is looking forward and he's proud of where he is at. Maybe not, you know, with the injury and the way the team is playing, but that's a whole other thing beyond his control. It was great. It was, you know, I wasn't at the game, but it was emotional to see him back. You know, obviously a very popular figure here. I don't think in the last two decades of Boston sports, you would find a more polarizing figure than Marcus Smart. You know, I think, you know, like maybe early Al Horford when he signed, or Tuukka Rask, you know, guys that might somewhat be in the conversation, but Marcus really a class of his own. I mean, people really loved him and swore by him, and you know, like it, in this house, we do not slander Marcus Smart. Those things that were being sold online for a while, or you hated him and you thought he was always guilty of hero ball and doing too much and was a detriment to the team's success and he was holding them back and there was just no in between. There was no in between with Marcus Smart, which is really unfortunate. I think a lot of people didn't appreciate him at a baseline for what he was here and what he is. What I thought was really interesting in the article you wrote, though, and you're not the first to say it, you probably know where I'm going with this. You feel his number 36 should be retired.
Yes.
I think most people would
disagree. Believe me, I've heard on X today. Yes.
I think even people. Like, I am a Marcus Smart stan, fan, supporter, and I disagree. I think a lot of people would disagree who even did love Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I think it's not the longevity factor. He was here for a long time, almost a decade. I think it's the ultimately, unfortunately, it just kind of comes back to he doesn't have a ring. He didn't.
Okay, Adam, he doesn't have a ring. So Rondo gets his number retired?
I don't think so.
He has a ring. He was a four-time All-Star. Three times he led the league in assists in Boston.
Yeah.
So what we have to do is this is my argument. Okay. I do actually this, think,
by the way, it's a Celtics problem because they have way too many numbers up there, so it brings down the
I threat. Actually do think about these things before I say them to the viewers who think I'm just coming up with shit.
Yeah. Okay,
so here's my thing about Marcus Smart. You retire jerseys for various reasons. Longevity, performance, championships, and the least one is culture changing. Hmm. Okay? Tony Allen is getting his number retired in Memphis. Was it because he put up a bunch of points? Hell no. It's because he changed the culture and created the grindhouse culture in Memphis. He's getting appreciated for that. Now, I'm not comparing the Celtics and the Grizzlies are probably desperate to retire somebody's number, right? Because they haven't won anything. However, I do think that Smart changed the Celtics culture. And you could say that it went too far. You could say that he had too much power and leadership. But remember, there's organizations, and I said this on television, like the Detroit Pistons have not recovered from losing Chauncey, Rip, still haven't recovered 15 years later from the breakup of that team. 15 years later, they are the worst franchise in basketball. Okay? I don't think they've won a playoff series since then. Do you know how long it takes to recover when you get old? Look at the 92 Celtics and the 93 Celtics and the 96. Look how long that took. Mm-hmm. Right? So a similar situation was coming. Garnett and Pierce were old. Allen left. Rondo was in his prime, but probably needed to be traded because he wasn't going to play with a bunch of youngsters. And he had value around the league. And the Celtics flipped it. Danny traded it, hired Brad. Doc was like, love this, love Boston, but I'm going to L.A. to golf more, coach Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Griffin, and try to win another championship. So Brad chooses Smart as his first pick in 14. In a few years, they came back. They're in Eastern Conference Finals in 18. Like, you know, and you could credit Smart, but also Isaiah, right? And if Isaiah had played long enough, who knows what would happen with his number four. But it didn't only – you can't retire somebody 2.5 years. But 9 years, defensive player of the year, three-time first-team all-defense, fourth all-time in steals, it's an intangible thing. It's not necessarily numbers. So my feeling is he helped change the culture. He helped bring Celtic basketball back because you can't bet that – it would have come back if he hadn't have been around. You could say, well, they would have drafted Jason and Jaylen. But who was their spiritual leader? Who was their heart and soul? Who sacrificed their body? Who died on the floor? Who was ready to jump in somebody else's ass for another team? Marcus. It wasn't Jaylen. It wasn't Jason. Love those guys. You know, and if we're talking about championships, Adam, Evan, if Tatum doesn't win a title, does he still get his number retired here?
Tatum? How long's in here?
Yes, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Because he's likely to finish as a Celtic. If he stays in Boston, he's going to be he'll approach Havlicek. Havlicek has 27,000, I want to say. Pierce is second. Like how are we basing this? And I think it's time, at times, a special situation. I'm not saying anybody who played 9 years in Boston deserves their number retired. I'm saying culture changing. That's the last category. Usually it's performance, longevity, and championships. Those are the three. Four is a culture change. I think Marcus, for what he did, and the fact that he didn't ask out, he didn't ask to be traded, he didn't bitch and moan, he's been a total gentleman. It was an addition by subtraction. We'll find out. But I think what he gave to the organization in his 9 years, and let's be honest, Marcus is going to be one of those guys with mangled hands and all that when he's done. Like, he has given his body. And he's about to turn 30. He's only 30 to this organization. I think it's a strong consideration after all is said and done. And was it his fault they lost in the 22 finals? Like, was it all his fault?
No.
Did Jason show up in that series? I love Jason. What was Jason in that series? What happened to Derek White after game one?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't win in 22. It wasn't Marcus against the Warriors. It was the Celtics against the Warriors. Only Jaylen was good in that series.
And I'll just say this. I understand everything you said and agree largely with much of what you said. I come from it, I guess, from a place I'm just more selective than the Celtics historically have been. For instance, like, I don't think Kevin Garnett should have his number retired, and he might be my favorite Celtic ever, you know, but, you know, for me with him, and you want to talk culture changing, my God.
That's what I'm saying. He won a title. I get it.
He won a title, but for me, it's longevity. He wasn't here long enough. Smart. He's got the years. He doesn't have the title. You know what I mean? So it's this combination.
What about Ray Allen?
No.
Cause he wasn't here long enough. The 5 years.
Yeah.
but he won a title and went to a game seven of another.
Right.
Because if the argument is he didn't win, Marcus ain't won no titles, then we should Scal, Gabe Pruitt, Leon Poe, all should be in their name in the rap if that's what we're doing. Because this organization, Adam, has won one title in 38 years.
Right.
So what we're doing is we're just saying, like, F everything, you got to win a title. And I think that was the level. But remember, in the 60s, I'm not taking anything away from those great players in the 60s, but there was Don Nelson, guys who were just guys who came off the bench and those got their numbers retired.
Right.
Like, but that's almost everybody did. Like, everybody. And it was it overkill? All those guys are mostly in the Hall of Fame. So, no, really. Casey Jones is a coach. Sam Jones was a tremendous player. I mean, I'm talking about Russell and Cousy. That's a given, right? Bill Sharman, Ed McCauley got his number retired, and he did not win a championship in Boston. He got traded for Russell. He was a great player. Like, so I don't know what scale we're doing this on now. Is it overkill? Like, I think some of the newer fans and some of the fans are like, yeah, we got too many numbers retired anyway, so we got to draw the line and cut this off because it's getting ridiculous. Like, okay, that's cool. So it's only like championships and that's it. Like, I don't like, do the Celtics need to adjust how they retire numbers? Or because obviously Pierce was a given.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Allen is a bubble and he's a Hall of Fame player. Rondo's an interesting case. 9 years, 4 All-Stars, 3 times led the league in assists, a championship in a game seven. And he was a motherfucker in those playoff series against Miami.
Yeah.
Right?
He was.
Rondo was a bad man. Okay? But he didn't leave. Like, he was not a popular player. Rondo was moody. I had my issues with Rajon Rondo personally, without question.
Connect Four? Was that the problem?
Yeah. But you can't. Yeah, exactly. I didn't whip my ass Connect Four. But you cannot argue against production. So the question is, should we review how we assess jersey retirements in Boston, or is it just championship or bust? If that's the case, fine. Because if Tatum doesn't win one, then we don't retire zero. If it's about championships. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm sure Jason will win one or two, and Jalen, because Jalen's going to be right behind him. If both of them win a title here, they're both getting their numbers retired. We know that, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
we know that. So with Marcus, I don't want to blame him. Well, he didn't win at all. 5 Eastern Conference championships. And I can't blame him for – I can blame him for some plays he made in Game 7 last year against Miami. But I can also blame, like, shooting too many fucking threes, excuse my language, damn threes, and, like, settling and then just not having the mental edge to win that game when you knew Miami was going to play their ass off. And Miami showed up, and the Celtics thought that they were done, and they weren't. Like, that's a lot. I don't know if you put all that on Marcus. Now, for me, I think it's an argument. I'm not like, oh, my God, if they don't retire, this is terrible. They did him as just justice. I just think for the culture changing that he did and for what he gave to the organization, I watched him for 9 years. Saw him hit 11 threes in a game at Cleveland. I saw him do the stuff as – and you call it hero ball, Evan, and I could agree. It got maybe a little overboard. But I saw him damn near fight Jaylen Brown in the bubble. I saw him want to win so badly. I saw him, that man, dye his hair green. I saw that man live to be a Celtic. That's got to mean something other than, see you, Marcus, enjoy Memphis because we're going to win a title without you. Like, all, you know, it's like all those people that cheered him last night have all flipped the script and come at me on X today. Like, damn, I thought Marcus was loved, but not that loved, huh? Because I'm getting mad insults and all that. My intelligence, I'm idiot. I'm drug tested. Like, which is great. That's okay. Like, I think it's a little much, but to me, like, it's something you wouldn't just absolutely think, oh, hell no. Like, what? Dennis Johnson got his number retired. Like, I love DJ. I'm a black dude with freckles, okay? I was told growing up I look like Dennis Johnson. So I love DJ, but isn't, like I'm saying, he helped with the two championships. So that gets him in, and he's in the Hall of Fame. And I'm not saying Marcus should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm just saying what he did in the 9 years is a really unusual circumstance. And if you guys can name someone who put 9-plus years in Boston that's not retired or not in the Hall that has a career impact like Marcus in Boston and with the Celtics, I'd like to know who that is.
I can like both sides of this. Like, I think on the one hand, I love the fact that you brought up, like, look at Detroit and, like, they just haven't recovered, right? It took Milwaukee, what, like 40 years to find the next star for them. Like, this is something that normally just dies. And what I think is interesting, I wouldn't call it a culture change. I would just call it a continuation of, like, the KG hard ass. Like, he just passed. Look, they had that great moment in that Brooklyn game where KG and Marcus, like, found each other for the first time. And they were diving after a loose ball on, like, the right base, the right sideline. And they, you know, they got, I think Marcus got up first and KG like dapped him on the way up. Like, hey man, like good play. Love that. Like it was awesome. Right. Yeah. He carried that torch on. And you could argue that like, that's maybe even harder to do when you have to like come after great guys like KG, Pierce and Allen who just had a bunch of battles and huge games for, you know, a good stretch of NBA history. Again, the flip side of that is when you look at Marcus Smart's time, he's got 1 foot in a team I would say is probably defined mostly by Isaiah Thomas and then a team mostly defined by Jalen and Jason. So, like, he's not the first guy you think of, maybe, when you think about those teams. And the thing that hurts is, like –
Johnson and Max and Parrish, McHale, and Bird and two other guys from that team had their numbers retired.
That's fair.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, and all championships. So your argument, the trump card from any Celtics, well, they won championships. I get it, but they went to Game 6 in 22. They went to Game 7 in a couple Eastern Conference Finals. Like, and to say Marcus, you don't deserve it because of that. You know, now will it make it look worse if the Celtics coast to the title this year without him? Maybe. I'm just saying. From what I saw, my eyes, his impact, it's worth consideration. Like, Celtic fans are like, oh, hell no. Like, I just think that's really dismissive of what his impact, what he did. Nobody said he's going to be a point guard. He became a point guard. I mean, you know, he's got the team record for made threes in a game. As much as his three-point shot was a damn fucking experience, a roller coaster experience. Excuse me, I'm cursing. I'm sorry. It's, you know, he has the team record for threes in a game. Like, Marcus improved. He became a point guard. You know, now, will the Celtics be better if he was here? Probably not. But you also have the development of Derek White and the addition of Kristaps Porzingis. Like, that's tough to judge, right? It's tough to judge. Oh, they're better because Derek White is a completely different player than when he arrived in Boston. And Kristaps Porzingis is a different difference maker at the big that they needed for years. Let's be really honest. Jason's having a good season and Jalen's having a good season. Drew's been solid, had his moments. I wouldn't say like, oh man, Drew's just been spectacular. Like, Drew's been solid. You hope that his better basketball is going to be in the playoffs, right? But you're talking about completely different Derek White. Like, man, I don't know. I mean, as I said, I can listen to arguments against it. And I wouldn't argue people down or say you're crazy, but to sit there and like, oh, hell no, that dude, like, it just completely dismisses. I've seen that dude break, you know, sprain ankles and his hands and all that, all the, you know, yeah, just, I mean, come on. Like, man, I just saw that dude do stuff that was like, you know what, if you're not going to do it, I'll do it. And that, to me, that's like, you know, to me, that says a lot.
See, this is why you listen to and watch Celtics Beat. You don't get this Gary on NBC Sports Boston.
Yeah.
No, look, I mean, I've got my opinion. Evan's got his. You've got yours. People listening and watching, they have theirs. The bottom line is only a couple opinions really matter, and that's of ownership. You know, and Wick Grosbeck, and this is not meant to be a dig, so I hope it's not interpreted as such. He's an emotional, sentimental guy about Celtics history. At, like, Kevin Garnett's number, whether or not you feel or I feel belongs up there, it's going up there. Ray Allen's might as well. Marcus Smart's absolutely might. You know, he's ready to put Tatum and Brown up there right now, and they still haven't won and haven't been here for a decade and all that stuff. You know, Rondo never really gets talked about. You know, Danny Ainge at some point in time is going to go up there in some form as, you know, for his decades of service with the Celtics and, you know, going back to player executive, all of it. Like, there are more numbers coming. They're going to need another one of those flags. Start a new one pretty soon. But listen, we've kept Gary long enough and we've interrupted dinner. Hopefully the chicken hasn't burned. But Gary,
no, it's fine. It's fine. My wife is home though. So
yeah, well, yeah. We'll let you go work on the work-life balance then. We've enjoyed this as always, and we'll definitely do it again soon, man.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Gary Washburn, obviously of the Boston Globe, of the Big Three podcast. Make sure you check that out. Part of the CLNS Media Network. For Evan, I'm Adam. We'll talk to you again later in the week.